David Batat looked impatiently at his watch. They were over 3 minutes late. Which is nothing to be concerned about, the short, agile American told himself. A thousand things could have held them up, but they would be here. They would come by launch or motorboat, possibly from another boat, possibly from the wharf 400 yards to his right. But they would arrive. They had better, he thought. He couldn't afford to screw up twice. Not that the first mistake had been his fault. The 43-year-old Batat was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency's small New York field office, which was located across the street from the United Nations building. Batat and his small team were responsible for electronic SOS activities, spying on spies. Keeping track of foreign diplomats who used their consulates as bases for surveillance and intelligence gathering activities. Batat also had been responsible for overseeing the activities of junior agent Annabel Hampton. 10 days before, Batat had come to the American Embassy in Moscow. The CIA was running tests in the communications center on an uplink with a new high-gain acoustic satellite. If the satellite worked on the Kremlin, the CIA planned on using it in New York to eavesdrop more efficiently on foreign consulates. While Batat was in Moscow, however, Annabel helped a group of terrorists infiltrate the United Nations. What made it especially painful was that the young woman did it for pay, not principle. Batat could respect a misguided idealist. He could not respect a common hustler. Though Batat had not been blamed officially for what Annabel did, he was the one who had run the background check on her. He was the one who had hired her. And her seconding action, as it was officially classified, had happened during his watch. Psychologically and also politically, Batat needed to atone for that mistake. Otherwise, chances were good that he would get back to the United States and discover that the field agent who had been brought in from Washington to operate the office in his absence was now the permanent New York field director. Batat might find himself reassigned to Moscow, and he didn't want that. The FBI had all the ins with the black marketeers who were running Russia, and the Bureau didn't like to share information or contacts with the CIA. There wouldn't be anything to do in Moscow but debrief board apparatchiks, who had nothing to say except that they missed the old days, and could they please get a visa to anywhere west of the Danube. Batat looked out over the tall grasses, the dark waters of the Bay of Baku, which led to the Caspian Sea. He raised his digital camera and studied the Rachel through the telephoto lens. There was no activity on the deck of the 61-foot motor yacht. A few lights were on below deck. They must be waiting. He lowered the camera. He wondered if the passengers were as impatient as he was. Probably, he decided. Terrorists were always edgy but focused. It was an unusual combination, and one way that security forces zeroed in on potential troublemakers in crowds. Batat looked at his watch again. Now they were 5 minutes late. Maybe it was just as well. It gave him a chance to get a handle on the adrenaline, to concentrate on the job. It was difficult. Batat had not been in the field for nearly 15 years. In the closing days of the war in Afghanistan, he had been a CIA liaison with the Mujahideen guerrilla fighters. He had reported from the front on Soviet troop strength, arms, deployment, tactics, and other battlefield details. Anything the military might need to know if the United States ever fought Soviet or Soviet-trained soldiers. That was back when the United States still had people on the ground collecting solid first-hand intelligence instead of satellites gathering pictures and audio transmissions, which teams of experts then had to interpret.